I call this Technical Advisory Committee meeting to order. And in terms of quorum, I believe we have that. And minutes. The minutes are in your packet. Is there any corrections, deletions, or changes to the minutes? Motion, is there a second? Motion and second. All those in favor, let them say aye.
Aye.
All the same sign. Motion carries. Staff reports. Financial progress report. Mr. Baker.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you can see in Attachment 3A, we have our financial report through the end of February. At this point, we've expended 43% of our budget, so we are well within budget this year. We do plan on adding two staffers in the next 2 months or so. So we're hoping then to be able to kind of get more right-sized with our budget since still kind of dealing with the losses of employees. So but with that, we're in very good shape. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Steve White, move to approve.
Motion, is there a second?
We do.
Motion and second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Technical progress report. Mr. Baker.
Thank you again. So biggest thing to announce, I guess, is that this week, actually, the last on Tuesday and Wednesday, we had the feds from Federal Highway and FTA in to do our four-year certification process. This included them reviewing all of our work over the last 4 years, making sure we followed all federal requirements, and kind of giving us recommendations on ways that we could enhance our transportation planning process. We had a public meeting on Tuesday night, which I'd like to thank Tony DeMasi for attending and speaking good words on behalf of AMATS and the process. But we were certified, at least tentatively we are certified. We were given a commendation for our public involvement processes, including our bike and brainstorms and our work on Better Block, as well as our Jane's Walk stuff. They were very pleased with that stuff. And recommendations included, actually, one of the things that we'll probably get into a little bit is looking into new forms of data. The feds, you know, we've always kind of used level of service as sort of our analysis for our congestion process. There's a big push to get us into more of an analyzing of delay in terms of especially peak delay and what kind of data we would need to collect that to get that information, working with our partners at ODOT and all that. So we will probably start with the next four-year process looking at some of the avenues for new data and ways to analyze our system with, you know, sort of get up to the newest, latest, and greatest, particularly using things like cell phone technology and location technology that tell us a lot more than just an ADT that's taken once a year. Otherwise, the other big news was that President Trump's administration released their first budget today. The big news from our perspective is, one, is that they're going to completely remove the Tiger Grant from basically from the federal process. They're also going to eliminate, I believe, Valerie, you might correct me if I'm wrong, with the New Starts program, and which is what I think is typically used for, I mean, light rail services, bus rapid transit, big transit. That will potentially be eliminated in the budget. And then the biggest hit, which doesn't affect AMATS directly, but affects a lot of your communities, is the proposal to eliminate the Community Development Block Grant, which is $3 billion, which I think affects almost every community in the room. Talking to some members and other things, I think our anticipation is this is not the final, this will not be the budget that's approved. However, I think it gives us a good idea of what the philosophy is of the administration, and thinking about how those things might trickle down into real policy that impacts organizations like ours is pretty critical. There has been discussion, again, still we keep hearing about $1 trillion of infrastructure. There were some rumors floating around that, you know, state DOTs were going to have to commit to being able to develop projects in 3 months and, you know, cut the red tape, basically, to develop shovel-ready projects. Unfortunately, the state DOTs are required to follow federal regulations, so I don't know, unless they're going to give us the authority to, you know, bypass regulations. It just seems like a lot of confusion out there. I mean, I kind of remain to think that as long as we have a highway bill, which we do, that the $1 trillion will continue to get pushed back into 2018 and maybe even further. But at the same time, I do think it's really important that we start collecting a list of projects that are what we would call shovel-ready, possibly ones that are outside of even AMAT's purview. Local, you know, everything from economic access roads to, you know, bridge projects to anything like that. I think we will look at trying to maybe create something so that we have a list to potentially give to our federal representatives and even to the state of projects that we think we could do in a very short amount of time, and kind of speak on behalf of all of our members from that perspective. So with that, are there any questions or thoughts or concerns about the technical progress side?
Are they going to outlaw the Indiana bat?
Yeah. It'd be nice. It'd be nice if they would. But yeah, this issues like that are, I think, you know, environmental documentation and all that is, I don't know how we get around it, but.
Okay, no further questions then. On the AMET's federal fund report, Mr. Poulet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 3C is the federal funds report. I have a couple of things I'd like to bring to your attention. First of all, we had one of our largest projects sell in February. That was Crossroad in Streetsboro. Was funded with $4.4 million of CMAQ funds. There's other than that, there wasn't really any other activity with the other projects in the STP or TAP categories. The funding program and balances tables, if you take a look at those, if you in particular take a look at the TAP table, I'd like to bring to your attention that because some things moved around, we currently don't have any TAP projects funded in fiscal year 2019. Summit County did express some interest in possibly moving up the Montrose sidewalk project, State Route 18 sidewalk project, but that's also dependent on Bath Township. So if any of you have any projects that you could advance, Green, if you have any projects you could advance into
25
you have a lot of projects.
I got to get my engineer here.
2020. Just let us know. Please let us know. The Funding Policy Subcommittee held its last meeting February 22nd. Curtis will actually present some of the changes we're proposing later in this meeting, so I don't want to steal his thunder, but we are planning to hold a workshop April 27th to maybe actively engage you in some discussion about the changes, and that will be at the Richfield Village Hall at 9:30, April 27th. And it'll just be a time to discuss any concerns you may have. And then we'll bring it back in May to for a final approval by the policy committee. And one last thing, we will be accepting CMAQ applications soon. The CMAQ schedule is always before we accept those applications before we accept the ones for STP and TAP, because that has to go through the state and we need a little more lead time with those. I will keep everyone posted on the schedule and how much money we'll have for funding as time goes on. And actually, one last thing, next Friday, March 24th, is a project review meeting at ODOT District 4. So I think that's all I have. If there's any questions,
I'd be
glad to answer them.
Thank you, sir. Seeing none, on the old business, fiscal year 2018 to 2021, TIP, second draft project list. Mr. Poulet.
Okay, thank you. At our last meeting, I handed out the first version of the table H3, the list of projects, and not a whole lot has changed. The way the process works is we kind of work with ODOT in coordinating the TIP, and we receive lists from them, and we kind of incorporate that into our TIP. And since the first initial list, there hasn't been very many changes in table H3, but the big difference is there's another table called a line item list that is attached to table H3, and I didn't have this list ready at the last meeting. So this is new, and this is a table of projects that have federal money in them and state money in them, but they don't have our TAMAC money in them. And a lot of these projects on that line item list are paving projects, district-wide type projects, culverts, and such. So I did try to keep it in a similar format as table H3, so you can take a look at that and check the projects that that's in your community. And that is the biggest difference between the first list that I handed out to you and the list that you're seeing today. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to take those now. So just take these, I know it's a lot to look at, just take these back to the office with you and just give them a check over to see if there's any discrepancies you might spot. And if there are, just please call me and we'll try to resolve them.
Okay. Thank you, sir. On the new business, the draft of Transportation Outlook 2040. Boy, it sounds like a long time.
That's right.
Mr. Bailey.
All right, thank you. We discussed last time we provided a project list, a draft project list for the plan. This is the entire document, including fiscally constrained recommendations, as well as air quality analysis, as well as a financial plan, as well as environmental mitigation strategies, appendix, et cetera. It's very close to being a final document. Again, Transportation Outlook's main emphasis is preserving the existing system. That's both for highways and for transit. The bulk of our money is shown in preservation projects. I think we estimate almost, $4 billion over the next 20-some years to keep our system maintained. We do have about, it's $150 million maybe of recommendations of specific projects. The key here is that if you have a project that includes adding new capacity, it must be listed on the plan. I know we emphasized that at the last meeting. We think we've included all of those. But if you see something missing that you think really should be on the plan, let us know. We also consider operational improvements as well as safety improvements consistent with the plan. So for recommendations of, saying, adding a turn lane or a center turn lane, those don't need to be listed in this document. Overall, I think we're pretty happy with where the draft is. It is going to be required to be approved in May. We're having a public meeting on Thursday, March 30th at 6:30 at the downtown Akron Library. The plan is on our current website right now. I'd be happy to answer any questions, or really, I would just urge you to take a look at it. If you see something that's missing, we'll do the best we can to add it. If it's not critical to the plan, as in if it doesn't have to be listed, we may not list it just because of our fiscal constraint requirements, showing what we can fund. However, we'll definitely try to take those things into account. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, or I definitely just want our members to have a chance to review it, take a look at it. And we'll be following up if we have any questions with you guys as we move into April and May.
Okay. Next is the draft funding policy guidelines update. Mr. Baker.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The last item, which I think is probably the one that most interest people are most interested in, is our draft funding policy guidelines. If you remember, back in May of 2016, the policy committee nominated a subcommittee to participate in a review of our funding policy guidelines and a look to make it more equitable, more fair, but also making sure that we're funding projects that we believe are regionally significant. The committee met six times over the last 9 or so months. What we've attached is the meeting summaries of all of those meetings. We've tried to make this as transparent as possible. You'll see major points of emphasis, major points of concern, motions that were made, etc. We've also included the funding policy guidelines document, as well as the new scoring criteria that is in draft form that is recommended by the funding policy subcommittee. Few things, the main things that have changed that I'll just highlight, the key recommendations. The TAC-TIP subcommittee had been identified as a major point of contention with who was represented on the committee. The committee is recommending that the policy committee chairman now also sit on the TAC-TIP subcommittee, as well as a representative from the city of the population over 20,000, a population of between 10 and 20,000, a rep between 5,000 and 10,000, as well as a village representative. The idea is that these positions would be appointed by the chairman each. I believe we would probably do it with each chairman change, a possibility of a reappointment in January. But that, we think, would also allow the TAC-TIP subcommittee to have better representation, one from a little bit from the elected official side of things, but also from smaller communities. Next, another major concern was projects that were coming during a funding cycle and applying in, say, 2014, and then coming back and applying for additional funds in 2016. The subcommittee felt that when you come to AMATS for money, that is what you get, and we should not see another application 2 years later for the same project. However, if the more money is needed for that project, that it should go through a request outside of the round of funding. So the idea being that the rounds of funding would be for new projects solely, with if there is an additional funding needed for existing projects, that those would be requested through the TAC-TIP subcommittee, through the TAC committee, and then ultimately approved by the policy committee. Third point, the resurfacing funding cap was lowered from $800,000 to $700,000. Analysis was done to show that, you know, we would be able to fund an additional, I believe, we were able to get about $1.2 million out of the program if we did that, to possibly fund an additional two projects of resurfacing at maximum. That was one that was advocated strongly for by the small communities. Also then, finally, I think the biggest one is that the scoring criteria has been revamped. If you look at the in the packet after the funding policy guidelines, you'll see where we have the funding policy criteria that existed before compared to how it changed from the STP program, the resurfacing program, and then the TAP program. With resurfacing and STP, the biggest change is that we are requesting communities, when they apply, to pick a priority project. Members did not like that communities were applying for multiple projects, especially in the realm of 10 to 15 to 20 projects per funding cycle. I'm not looking at you, Brad, but I am. And what we felt was that, really, also to spread the money around, that make sure that communities have a fair shot of creating bonus points for that one project. We want everyone's best project to be competing against each other. If a project is a really great project, it should still be able to overcome the bonus points and still compete. we think that that will also be a really positive change to also ensure that one community isn't getting three or four projects per funding cycle, because I think that was actually the impetus for even the funding policy subcommittee being created. Do you have a question, Amy?
Is that one per each category?
Yes. So you get a priority project. Well, now we didn't add priority projects to the TAP program, to the bike and ped program, mostly because those, I think, have different limits. They kind of span different areas. But for resurfacing, if you're going to do a resurfacing project and you submit seven, you need to tell us which one you want the bonus points added to. Same with the STP program. Other changes was on ADT. What we started doing is, and if all of you recall, you know, we used to have between 10,000 and 15,000 ADT. You got that many points. Now what we're doing is we're dividing ADT by 1,000, so that basically, if you apply and your road has 14,000 vehicles, you get 14 points. When someone else's road has 12,000 vehicles, they're getting 12 points instead of both of you getting 15 points or whatever it was. It's to help us differentiate the numbers, but also we felt like a range of 5,000 ADT was too much. So we wanted to make sure that we divided by 1,000. We will round up by the nearest 100, so if anyone's wondering, if it's 14.3, it'll go down to 14. If it's 14.7, it'll be 15. Trying to think of other issues. We did add an STP. Probably the biggest add in STP was adding a roadway condition component to the surface transportation program. The reason that we did that was that we really wanted to dissuade communities for applying for projects when the existing road condition of that project was had a very good pavement condition rating. We felt that we didn't want to continue to double down on projects where the road was already of a high quality, but there was an interest in adding a center turn lane or a median. We want to get the most out of our money, especially with preservation being the main goal of our MPO. As Dave mentioned, in April, we are having a workshop. The idea, if any of you, I think a lot of you attended the last workshop, it was really meant to be an open forum, ask questions, provide suggestions. As TAC members, you're obviously encouraged to attend, welcome to make comments now or any time in this period between April. I will say that all recommendations or suggestions will be cataloged and then provided to the policy committee for their final judgment. So if the TAC makes a recommendation, that will be brought to the policy committee as, the TAC makes this recommended change. Because this is sort of a policy committee driven process. So I think with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, any concerns. The goal was to give you guys a month to be able to really just look at this stuff and come up with kind of what you thought maybe were going to be red flags or concerns or anything like that. I will say I know a few of the members are here from that subcommittee, John, and could speak to how much time we spent on this, and I think are pretty pleased with the result and think we'll have a good outcome. And then obviously 2 years from now, after we do our funding round of funding this fall, we will look at what worked, what didn't, are there things that we can improve. So with that, I'll shut up, but hopefully at least we've provided you a good basis to really sink your teeth into it and give us some thoughtful ideas on where it stands now.
Curtis, each city over 20,000 will still be sitting.
Yes, sorry, I misspoke on that. Yeah, every city over 20,000 still is on.
So the policy committee chair, so each 20,000 plus will be on.
Policy chair,
and then you've added.
Village, 5 to 10, 10 to 20. Yeah, so four new members.
One of each.
Yeah, appointed by the policy committee chair. I think through the discussions, and John even correct me, but through the discussions, I think, and Joe as well, sorry, John, I didn't see you, but it was, I think some of the thought was that, for the people that were on the committee, they didn't feel as though being on it gave them a complete unfair advantage, but at the same time, we felt from an optics perspective, it made sense to be more inclusive on the committee to potentially provide some, and I think that's where that rationale came from.
You'll just need a bigger conference room.
Yeah. We'll blow out a wall.
The committee, the subcommittee, see a lot of duplicates from certain communities. Is that just attendees, or was that the actual committee?
That was the actual committee. So the committee was made up of...
Two from Richfield, two from Portage County, two from...
Well, Richfield had two people attending, but it was Mayor Bushera was the chair. There was an Akron representative, a Kent representative, the Portage County engineer, the Summit County engineer, the...
Even though two might be attending.
Yeah, there was only one vote per. So the mayor of Richfield usually brought her economic development planning director as well, but it was one member, one vote for those. And the way when the policy committee approved that, the vote was, it was the two largest cities, two middle cities, two small cities, and the county engineers, with then the mayor of Richfield being the chairperson. So
just the way I read it.
Yeah. Yeah, we just listed the attendees. Like, yeah.
Bob's here too.
Oh, Bob, I'm sorry. I'm getting old.
Curtis, who picked the, because a lot of people volunteered to be on the committee. Who did the actual decide what?
The chairman. Chairman of the policy committee, Mayor Glenn Brasco. And then it was voted on at the policy committee level and approved unanimously.
So when are you looking to adopt the funding policy?
Well, I know Dave mentioned it would, like, May would be a goal, but I think the reality is what we'll do is we'll get comments between now and April, bring those, if we have a lot of substantial comments, we would bring them to the committee in May and say, what do you like, what do you not? And I could see the final being, I believe our meeting is in June, not July, final approval in June. But it'll either be May and June, depending on the all the comments that we get. And like I said, I think you guys are obviously closest to it, but there definitely is a political element to this. That's how this process got started, which is why we want to make sure that the policy committee stays involved and has kind of they get the final call on approving the funding policy, which is traditionally how it's been. So,
does that timetable work? Are you asking for applications?
We'll be asking for applications in like September. So as long as we get it approved, typically we, like last round of funding, we approved our funding policy in August. So we'll be ahead of the game. And if it stalls,
significant changes.
Yeah. So if it stalls. That's why we're bringing it in April, May, June, mm-hmm. August. So we have plenty of time.
Famous last words.
Yeah. And quite frankly, if it does go longer than even that, we don't have to have a round of funding in the fall. I mean, we're already looking out to 2021, 2022, 2023. We could easily push it back to January. But we're going to make sure this is completed. We're not going to do a round of funding without new funding policy guidelines. So, we anticipate it coming down to a policy committee vote at the end of the day of what we like and what we don't.
Can I ask Curtis why pavement condition rating for just the regular STP program became so important? The only thing I can see with that is I looked at my pavement condition ratings just for a resurfacing project. Between the 2 years that they were done.
Right.
They were at 81 year and 65.
Right.
So they fall pretty fast. And you're talking about these larger projects that could take 5 years to develop. So you're talking about pre-planning and programming. Yeah. I usually, after I resurface a project, a couple years after, we're thinking, okay, we have 10 years. Let's start looking at needs mm-hmm. in the city. So it's, being proactive in planning. But I score terrible.
Right. I think the biggest concern, and we understand that there's issues with the data, but I think what the committee did not like was the idea that we were funding projects with PCRs of 90 and 92 and 93 when there were preservation needs that were deemed to be more important. I think that was that's the rationale for that. Yes, we know the data is not great. However, that's something that I think we're going to have to we have to figure out a way to take into account, I think, the preservation of the system. And so that was sort of the rationale behind that.
So they're thinking more communities will put that money up front on speculation that they'll get a project if they start their planning and their engineering and design, whereas opposed to a lot of people, they got money already booked or partially booked for the project.
Right.
Then they're, okay, so we're going to move forward. That's the only difference I've seen it.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I will honestly say, I mean, through the committee discussion, I don't think there's any like right or wrong way to do it. This is sort of the way the committee felt it was important to look at. And, you know, I would say written comments are probably more helpful than, you know, just coming up and talking to me about it, because I think that's, you know, having it actually documented that we can share will be beneficial if there are major concerns. But I do think, too, you know, we'll gauge the policy committee's reaction as well next week and see what some of the thoughts are as well. But the idea being at the workshop, we would be able to kind of talk about it in more depth, et cetera. So.
That's good. Okay, nothing further on that. Unless somebody has anything. Resolutions.
Yes.
A rarity. Other business. We do have one introduction.
Yeah, so I wanted to introduce Valerie Shea, who is now Metro's new planning director, officially new, and so I wanted to give her a chance to introduce herself and be welcome to the committee.
So. Sure. So I've met some of you already, but just to introduce myself, I'm Valerie Shea. As Curtis said, I've been at Metro now since January 3rd, just a couple months under my belt, and I just wanted to update this committee on the Driving Metro Forward process, because I know that that was presented to you last year. And so kind of with this change in staff at Metro, we are kind of taking a little step back on the project and looking at all the analysis that was already done. It had kind of gone through the planning process to the point where there were recommendations for what the routes would look like. But some feedback from the appointing authorities of our board and other stakeholders, taking that into account, we're going to do more of an alternatives analysis. All the work will still be done in-house, but we're going to look at different levels of investment and the cost and benefit of each of those, of, you know, maybe spending some more operating or capital money to get improvements in ridership and, you know, serve our core customers better. So part of that process is gathering a lot of data and speaking to all of you that are around the table now that are in Summit County that Metro serves. So we're really going to focus on workforce is a big key issue for us. So getting information on the different businesses and where their employees are coming from and shift times and everything. We want to have as much data as possible going into the planning process. And we kind of want to kick it off with a large planning charrette that we'll probably be organizing in mid to late May. So I'll keep everybody informed of that, but just kind of keep that in your mind for now. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me at any time.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, no other business? Is there a motion to adjourn?
Anybody move to adjourn? Do you need a motion?
Meeting adjourned.